This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
These trends compel people to displacement, aggravate conflicts and political instability, and fuel recruitment by violent extremist groups.
That's UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, Michelle Bachelet, on how climate change is fueling the humanitarian emergency in Africa's Sahel countries. Details coming up. And 4 days of meetings by politicians and society groups opens up today in Guinea to discuss the country's future. These stories and more ahead on African News Tonight. But first, our top story. The role that ECOWAS and the African Union could play in discouraging military takeovers and encouraging democratic transitions has come into focus following coups in Mali, Guinea, and an attempted coup in Chad. Christopher Iseki is a professor of African politics and international relations at South Africa's University of Pretoria and president of the African Association of Political Science. Iseki spoke with reporter Mike Mbonye about how ECOWAS and the African Union have failed to prevent leaders from perpetuating themselves in power through referendums. He says the state system in Africa should be redesigned to produce new social contracts.
West Africa has had three coups, two in Mali and one in Guinea, and then an attempted coup in Chad between 2020 and 2021 alone. And this is a disturbing trend in the region. And unfortunately, the AU or ECOWAS have not been able to successfully mediate the political crisis these coups have caused, not just in Mali, Chad, and Guinea, but also their contagion effect on other states in the continent. So if we take the recent case of Guinea, for example, what does the ECOWAS mean by urging the military to immediately return to constitutional order or demanding that the security forces maintain constitutional posture? What do these urging and demand mean in concrete terms? They mean nothing because the military are still in power in Guinea and Mali. More targeted actions such as suspension and sanctions have not restored civilian or democratic rule as the ECOWAS had hoped in both cases. All right. So the region, like most of the continent, has a penchant for sit tight leaders to change the constitution and extend their stay in office. And the AU and ECOWAS have been largely silent on this issue, which is a trigger for coups and the kind of masses jubilation we've seen in Guinea. So for me, the biggest failure of the ECOWAS and AU, therefore, is the one of failing to prevent leaders from perpetuating themselves in power unduly through sham referendums to validate self-centered constitutional changes.
Do such organizations have the influence or authority to push for democratic transitions?
These organizations have the ability to push for democratic transitions if African leaders have the political will to consolidate democracy in the continent. If they do, they will put measures in place to prevent themselves from self-perpetuation in office. But this has been difficult for them to do because many of them prefer to die in office as a result of their greed and short-sightedness, in my view. Because of that, these organizations, especially the ECOWAS, has been more reactive than proactive, in addressing the challenges in the sub-region. And this is the same attitude that they have carried on to coup as well.
In some cases, it seems that ECOWAS and the African Union just basically accept coups and deal with the ruling military. Why is it that?
To your last question, about whether the ECOWAS and AU, you know, basically accept coups and deal with the ruling juntas. I don't think the ECOWAS and AU like to accept coups and the military governments they produce. They are actually forced to, you know, because of the failure of African leaders to put measures in place, like I said before, to prevent coups in the first place. Now, once coups happen, depending on the interests of other African leaders with the, in the region and in the continent at large, and of course the French factor in West Africa, the ECOWAS and the AU become strings that are pulled by the heads of states who actually have control powers over these organizations. So the broader solution is to redesign the state system in Africa to produce new social contracts between states and citizens that work for the common good of the people and therefore that of the state. When that happens, we shall have a different model of regional organizations in Africa that will be configured to deal with coups if at all they occur then. So that would be my response,
That was Christopher Isiki, a professor of African politics and international relations, speaking by phone with reporter Mike Mbonye. Guinea's military junta, led by Colonel Mamadi Doumbouya, is facing more pressure to set up a timeline for new elections following a coup just over a week ago. 4 days of meeting opened today to discuss the country's future. After wrapping up his visit to the capital Conakry yesterday, the head of the UN Office of West Africa and the Sahel, Anadif Katir Mahamat Saleh, said he was placing a lot of hope in this week's meetings. According to the Associated Press, the coup has been welcomed by longtime opponents of President Alpha Conde, including Guinea's most prominent opposition figure, Selou Daline Diallo, who lost to the ousted leader in the last three presidential elections. Anger over Condé's quest for a third term last year led to violent street demonstrations, and many in Conakry have shown support for the military takeover. Among those taking part in this week's meeting are leaders from Guinea's mining industry, Diallo's party, other critics of Condé, and religious leaders. Officials in Cameroon say there has been a jump in case of civilians assaulting police officers. Videos shared on social media in Cameroon show citizens mocking and battering police in response to alleged brutality and corruption. Moke Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
Paul Atanganji, the Territorial Administration Minister, also tasked with civilian protection, says at least 15 videos of civilians refusing police orders and attacking officers have been shared on social media platforms within the past 2 weeks. Nji said the police force confirmed its officers were the victims in the videos. In some cases, he said, police have been victims of humiliation, battery, and other forms of assault from civilians the police are supposed to protect.
This irresponsible behavior towards the police is unacceptable. It should be understood that the police is at the service of each and everyone. Under the very esteemed guidance of the head of state, His Excellency President Paul Biya, no person, regardless of their social status, for whatsoever reason, has the right to assault a police officer on duty.
In one video, a driver refuses a police demand to search his car, hits the police officer, and then runs him over with his car while some bystanders applaud. Another video appears to show a civilian carrying a police officer on his shoulder before throwing him on the back of a truck. The civilians are believed to be retaliating for acts of police brutality or corruption. Nji said if civilians have grievances, they should send complaints of alleged police misdeeds to the chief of police, who can take disciplinary action. However, human rights lawyer Christopher Ndong says when police brutality and corruption are reported, senior government and police officials do not investigate. He adds that police often beat people, detain some abusively, and extract bribes from innocent civilians.
There is no adult Cameroonian who will not tell you the excesses of a policeman. You have a document, all complete. A policeman say you are wrong, you must give 500. You have documents which are wrong. Policeman will not impound this record as the law provides. A policeman will be asking the man to pay fines that are determined by him, and the state sits and look at it. You see the fabulous one is collecting, and he does it with arrogance because they have guns.
Police officials deny the allegations, saying most officers in Cameroon are neither corrupt nor take part in civilian abuse. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Following a strong army offensive on criminal gangs, gunmen in Nigeria have freed 75 students kidnapped this month in northwest Zamfara state. According to Reuters, more than 1,100 children across the region have been taken since December by heavily armed gangs seeking ransoms. In a separate incident, the French news agency AFP reports that gunmen yesterday stormed a jail in Nigeria's central Kogi state, freeing around 240 prisoners. The latest report today said 108 have been recaptured. The UN Human Rights Council has begun its annual session in Geneva, and in an opening address, UN High Commissioner for Human Rights Michelle Bachelet warned yesterday that climate change and pollution pose grave threats to human rights and humanity itself. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
The UN rights chief says human inaction in the face of planetary disasters is having a severe impact on a broad range of rights, including the rights to adequate food, water, education, health, and even life itself. Michelle Bachelet says extreme and murderous climate events have been unleashed on people in every region in recent months.
Monumental fires in Siberia and California, huge sudden floods in China, Germany, and Turkey. Arctic heat waves leading to unprecedented methane emissions and the persistence of interminable drought from Morocco and Senegal to Siberia, potentially forcing millions of people into misery, hunger, and displacement.
Bachelet warns intensifying environmental threats constitute the single greatest challenge to human rights. She says environmental disasters amplify conflicts, tensions, increase vulnerabilities, and structural inequalities around the world. For example, she notes the humanitarian emergency in Africa's Sahel countries is being fueled by climate change. She says long droughts followed by flash floods, unequal access to natural resources, and high rates of youth unemployment are plaguing the region.
These trends compel people to displacement, aggravate conflicts and political instability, and fuel recruitment by violent extremist groups. In such a situation, it should be clear that there can be no purely military solution to the conflicts in the region. To date, 4 million people across the Sahel have been displaced, according to UNHCR estimates.
Bachelet says similar trends and challenges exist in different forms and to varying degrees in all regions of the world. For example, Asia, the Middle East, and North Africa are gripped by water shortages, causing tensions to rise over this scarce resource. She reports climate change is having a striking impact on poverty, displacement, and fundamental human rights in Guatemala, El Salvador, and Honduras. She says environmental and human rights defenders are being threatened, harassed, and even killed, often with complete impunity, in Latin America, Southeast Asia, and other regions. The UN rights chief says a safe, clean, healthy, and sustainable environment is the foundation of human life. She adds, the future of humanity depends on governments acting to preserve the world's precious resources. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
While the COVID-19 pandemic has pushed Africa's economy into contraction, it has further highlighted the need for accelerating the continent's digitalization. Experts say countries can leverage rapid technological innovation to foster stronger economic growth and promote sustainability and inclusiveness against the backdrop of the urgent action needed to offset the impact of COVID-19 on Africa's economies and economic trajectory. Vira Sangui, the executive secretary of the United Nations Economic Commission for Africa, spoke with reporter Ruben Chama. He began by asking how African governments can address the greater economic burden that COVID-19 has placed on women and girls.
I think the first one is to make sure that the already existing safety net programs that many countries have because of the 2008 crisis are reactivated, and women and children in particular get the support that they need. One of the things that, of course, COVID has done is that many women, particularly small and medium enterprise women who are in business, their businesses have closed. They need to still feed their kids. And so these kinds of safety net programs will be quite important. I think the second thing is looking at, you know, something that, again, the government of Kenya and many others are doing, is providing e-vouchers where, you know, people get some cash transfers into their phones and they can use that for spending and at least make sure that they meet their basic needs and necessities. In Ghana, for example, what the government has done, it has provided insurance for all health workers, nurses, again, to make sure that they can take care and protect their families. And then on the kids' side, it's really keeping open for countries that didn't close schools, but many countries, for many countries, schools have opened again, making sure that school feeding programs exist so that those kids who do not have access to a good meal at home at least can have something when they go to school. So you get them, you keep them at school, because one of the things, of course, COVID has done is it has taken a lot of kids away from school. By providing more school feeding programs, you allow them to come to school but also get a healthy meal.
In some ways, such as digital money, African nations and businesses are ahead of others on adapting to digital technologies. In what other ways can Africa use digital technology to fuel economic growth?
I think, first of all, let me start by saying that at the Economic Commission for Africa, we did a study looking at the impact of COVID on small and medium enterprises. And what we saw was that companies and small and medium enterprises in particular, but all companies in general that had their businesses online, suffered less from the crisis than those that did not. So I think the first thing that governments will want to do is to make sure that many more businesses have access to the internet and mobile devices. Right now on the continent, access is not widespread, even though we believe it is. It's only about 28% of all Africans that have access and can afford it, because it's one thing to have a mobile phone. It's another thing to be able to afford the cost. And then third, the internet connectivity that allows you then to be able to do more with it, particularly manage your business. So I think what government should do is see whether they can work to ensure that we have a competitive telecom sector that makes sure that access to this technology is affordable and that comes at a good speed so people can also do their business on it. And then, of course, on the education side, is to educate more of our youth for designing their own applications.
That was Vera Sangui, the executive secretary of the United Nations Economic Commission for Africa, speaking with VOA's Ruben Chama from Nairobi. In South Africa, a civil rights organization is preparing to ask a court to compel the country's prison's chief to detail the process that was followed in granting medical parole to former President Jacob Zuma. The 79-year-old Zuma was freed last week after serving about 2 months of a 15-month sentence for contempt of court after he refused to testify at an inquiry into corruption that happened when he led South Africa. Zuma's representatives have indicated he is terminally ill but have refused to explain the nature of his condition. Darren Taylor has more.
Zuma was freed on instruction from Correctional Services Commissioner Arthur Fraser. Fraser happens to be the man who Zuma appointed to lead South Africa's intelligence department during his presidency. Fraser acknowledges he didn't follow the legal requirement of having an independent medical parole board assess Zuma before releasing him. The prison's chief told the state broadcaster he was, however, satisfied with reports issued by the former president's and the department's doctors.
It was only around the third report that we received where his medical team, in conjunction with our team, indicated that he can no longer be kept in our facility because the type of medical care required, we are not able to provide. And this assessment is made with every other offender.
policy head at the AfriForum NGO, Ernst Rutz, who's also a lawyer, says it's impossible at this stage to verify Fraser's statements as the department's keeping everything regarding Zuma secret.
You can't make the argument that we're protecting Jacob Zuma's personal constitutional rights, therefore we're not disclosing any information. It's not a violation of the prisoner's rights if you publish the information according to which you took the decision that he should be released from prison. But if you don't do that, it's a violation of the public's rights.
Root says South Africans deserve to know how and why convicted criminals escape punishment, especially with a high-profile figure such as Zuma, who's also due to stand trial soon on multiple counts of corruption for allegedly stealing millions of rands of public money.
The first question we want to have an answer to is former President Jacob Zuma terminally ill? If you're in prison or in jail and you get sick, that doesn't mean by implication that you get released on medical parole. You have to be really, really extremely sick.
AfriForum also wants to know why Fraser didn't allow the Medical Parole Advisory Board to make recommendations about Zuma.
We are very concerned that the legal processes have not been followed, that in a way former President Jacob Zuma was released, obviously because of his political connections and because of his own political standing. This clearly sends an indication that in South Africa, according to the justice system, you are being treated depending on who you are. Your identity determines how you would be treated by the justice system.
Root says he knows of many prisoners who were very sick and even terminally ill, but weren't granted medical parole. Some newspapers are reporting that President Cyril Ramaphosa authorized Zuma's release. They quote government sources saying Ramaphosa didn't want Zuma to die in jail, which the president feared would spark the kind of violence that followed Zuma's incarceration in July. Root says it's bad news if the president helped to free Zuma.
There's no point in saying we're serious about corruption, you know, we're not going to stand down, you know, we're going to make sure that we address this problem head on. And then once someone refuses to show up at the commission of inquiry where corruption is investigated and a court rules that this person should go to prison, that person is only there for a few weeks before a decision that that person should be released.
Ramaphosa's office says he'll respond at a later stage. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
The Voice of America's Global News Program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest news stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. Our correspondents gather the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 1705 UTC on The Voice of America.